It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. You're with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, the sound of a rattlesnake tail might send a primordial chill down your spine, but our next guest says timber rattlesnakes are surprisingly docile and predictable. First, the United Kingdom voted late last night to leave the European Union. The British exit, or Brexit, from the EU has shocked the entire global economy and sent the value of the pound down to its lowest since 1985. There's now major financial uncertainty around the world. Investors are taking refuge in the more stable American dollar and Japanese yen, which has boosted the value of both currencies, at least for now. Brexit also takes place in a highly politically charged climate, with the November election just a few months away. Sarah Bowerly Dansman joins us now. She's the Assistant Professor of International Studies at Indiana University Bloomington. Sarah, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you, Veronica.
Well, how do you see this shocking vote shifting the financial focus?
Yes, it is quite a calamity. I was shocked last night as I was reading the returns on Twitter. I think that there are a few broad concerns here. First, it's clear that we're going to have a recession in the UK. The reverberations will probably be wide. There's a lot of concern that this is just the first of increasing exits in the euro more broadly. In terms of the financial markets, there's a lot of concern that the London banks will start to devolve away from London into other places such as Paris, Frankfurt, Brussels, etc. Basically, because there are over 250 foreign banks in London right now, and once the UK leaves the EU, they no longer will have the regulatory advantages that they have enjoyed for quite some time now. So that's a major concern right now in global markets.
What do we know so far about how this could impact the United States economy?
Well, you know, I don't think that we're going to see this turn into another Lehman-style kind of broad-based financial crisis. The source of the problem here is not a debt crisis. It's because of a lot of uncertainty in markets and the falling pound. But this is also not another Greece, because even as the value of the pound falls, you know, the British government is in a much different position than Greece, because the British government doesn't borrow in another country or in another currency, so it's not getting more expensive for them to pay down debt. And the British government also still has the ability to use its own central bank to guide interest rates. So we're not looking at a major global financial meltdown. What we are looking at instead is an extended recession in the UK that could have important kind of real sector effects throughout the global economy, which is problematic because we're already in a kind of global environment of low growth. And so for me, I think that one of the big things that we have to worry about is that, you know, as you mentioned kind of on the top, the flight to safety that is being generated by all this uncertainty in the markets is boosting the U.S. dollar in global markets, which is helpful to us in some ways, but it also disadvantages U.S. exporters, and especially in a political climate right now where the trade deficit comes up time and time again, that may be pretty politically toxic. As well, if the recession in the UK crosses over into the U.S., that will also have an effect on the elections in November, because we know that economic distress really affects the outcome of elections, and it especially makes it harder for the incumbent party, in this case the Democrats, to be able to win.
We're talking with Sarah Bowerly Dansman right now from the University of Indiana at Bloomington. And if there you're predicting pretty much, you're saying sort of for sure, a recession in the UK. What would have to happen for that to cross over and affect the United States? Would it be that export market you were talking about?
Well, I don't think that the U.S. economy is as reliant on the UK as a primary export market, that in and of itself would lead to a major recession in the U.S. The issue is more of what are the knockdown effects from Brexit in terms of how Britain leaving the euro affects affects Europe more broadly and the eurozone more specifically. There are a lot of concerns that in the wake of this exit, that there's going to be a lot of political reshuffling within the UK itself, with perhaps Scotland leaving the UK and renewed considerations for Northern Ireland to join with Ireland proper. And then there's always concerns that other countries may start to increase calls to also leave the euro, and so this can really drag down global trade more broadly. And if global trade takes a big hit, that can be a big problem for the U.S. economy more broadly. And so that's the real concern, is that this is going to have these big ripple effects in terms of trade beyond the U.S.-UK trading partnership to a much broader global concern.
Let's talk about the politics of the U.K. exit. Here's President Obama. Here's what he had to say.
I do think that yesterday's vote speaks to the ongoing changes and challenges that are raised by globalization.
President there referring to globalization, perhaps turning the tide on that vote last night. What does this tell us about how globalization is impacting people?
Yes, well, we have already seen this quite a bit in the primary election cycle in the U.S., and so we see this global concern as inequality clearly is becoming more of a problem and more talked about even among developed countries, is that people are increasingly asking, is the global economy working for me, right, or people like me? And increasingly, a lot of people are thinking that it has not worked very well. And you can, I mean, it's hard to argue with people who see that there haven't been real wage growth in the U.S. since the 1970s. And so we see the gains from globalization in large part going to the wealthiest individuals, both in the U.S. and kind of broadly among, elites. And so the question then becomes, what should we do about it? And there are kind of two ways to react to this politically. One is to erect barriers and restrict trade, and the other is to provide more support for displaced workers. But that requires baseline trust in government, and we're in a extended environment in which voters are really taken in with these arguments that government is not to be trusted. And so from a political standpoint, those who want to encourage increased globalization, increased openness, are going to have to find ways to compensate those who are displaced by trade more effectively, and to do so in ways that they can build trust in the institutions of governance, which is a hard battle to wage at this point in time.
Now, closer to home, the two leading candidates for the next president of the United States have weighed in on this. Here's a clip of Donald Trump talking about Brexit, which he supported.
I think people really see a big parallel. A lot of people are talking about that, and not only the United States, but other countries. People want to take their country back. They want to have independence, in a sense. And you see it with Europe, all over Europe. You're going to have more than just, in my opinion, more than just what happened last night. You're going to have, I think, many other cases where they want to take their borders back. They want to take their monetary back. They want to take a lot of things back.
And just briefly, Sarah, we see Donald Trump referencing some similar ways of thinking right there, maybe talking about a similar tie to populism. How might this affect what happens in the American presidential race?
Yeah, well, I think that this is going to be one of the major arguments in this election, is what are we going to do about globalization? And Donald Trump has clearly come out in the side of that we need to erect more barriers to trade, to globalization, to the movement of goods, people, and money throughout the world. And I think that Hillary Clinton, you know, in her time as Secretary of State, was a big booster of the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Trade Partnership, and has since walked away from that quite a bit during her primary. With Sanders. And I think that what's going to happen here is that those, the Hillary Clinton camp is going to have to come up with a much clearer argument for why trade can be good and how we can create programs in the U.S. to help protect workers in the economy who feel displaced by trade. And I think that the thing that's hard about this is that, you know, is that the arguments against openness are a lot simpler and easier to understand. The arguments for openness are in many ways, you know, way more supported by empirics, but they're also really complex and difficult to get down to short sound bites, and so they don't lend themselves very well to campaign sloganeering. And so because of that, it's going to be challenging for those of us in the kind of policy circles who think that openness is a good thing net for the U.S. and for the global economy to be.
Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today.
Okay, thank you.
That was Sarah Bowerly-Dansman. She is a professor of international studies at Indiana University, Bloomington, and she joined us to look at some of the impacts the Brexit vote will have on the United States.